This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, welcome everybody. It is the Monday, April 20th edition of TalkBack. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by our great sponsors, which include Gomer's Diesel Incorporated. Diesel repairs, parts, service in Missoula. Call Gomer's at 728-7620 today. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. Call Busy Bees Cleaning Service, LLC, for a free estimate at 550-3219. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales. Call 541-9097 for Bruckner's Truck and Equipment. Quality Seamless Gutters of Montana, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call 728-4002. And at Y West Storage, they offer secure, flexible self-storage in Missoula. To reserve your unit today, call Y West at 406-510-0590.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Well, good morning once again, everybody. I am Peter Christian. The fabulous Nick Christensen is right across the way. Good morning, Mr. Nick. How are you?
Good morning.
What was your weekend like? Anything new and exciting going on, or what's happening?
No, not really. Mowed my mom's yard yesterday, but yeah, just kind of relaxed. We got a long week this week, so I had to get ready for that.
What a nice guy. A nice guy. Mow your mom's.
Yeah.
Yard. Good for you. All right. We already have a caller on the line. It is open phones for this first hour. And I do believe, first half hour. That's right. Then we have the KGVO book club coming up. But right now, Ed is on the line. Ed, good morning, sir. You're on TalkBack. What's up?
Yes, good morning. You know how Fox News Online has stories and there's a little box or a little square for each one you click on, you get the story.
Right.
There was one last weekend that had maybe a connection with. We were sitting 8 years ago. We were sitting on our beach on Hood Canal, waiting for dinner time to come around.
Okay.
And we were looking out south, and from the west comes this plane, really low, big plane. Okay, twin engine prop plane. And behind it was a fighter jet.
Wow.
Okay, real close. Too close, I thought, at the time.
like an escort or what? Or?
It was keeping a real close eye on this big commercial plane.
Okay.
And there was a second fighter jet. These were F-15s.
Yeah.
A second fighter jet that was further back and up high, and he was kind of a back. It reminded me of being a backup, and there was something wrong with this big plane.
Wow.
What it turns out is that some Horizon Air employee stole this plane.
Oh, no!
From SeaTac and took off in it, and flew around for an hour. It included a barrel roll.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay?
Was anybody else in the plane, or is it just him?
No, it was just him.
Okay, and all right.
He wasn't a terrorist. He didn't want to hurt anybody. He just sort of goofy idea to do this.
Hey, Mom, look what I'm doing.
Yeah, right. And eventually, after he came by our place, he crashed. Either ran out of fuel or crashed into a real small island I'd never seen before. But imagine that, sitting there looking straight out. All of a sudden, here comes a fighter jet following a it had to be a commercial plane.
Now, was it like a Cessna, or was it just like
an
airliner?
It was more like an airliner.
Oh,
but,
my goodness.
I think it was a freighter.
Wow.
A freighter.
Wow.
But you can Google Q400. That's the model of the plane.
Okay.
And you can get some feedback on this. But we didn't have a camera. This was a no phone zone.
Okay. Gotcha.
No phones are allowed. Have a camera. Didn't have a phone. Otherwise, caught a picture from the side of this guy going by.
Ed, thanks for the call. Thanks for the update, man. Way to start our day. We appreciate it. Have a great day. Okay, we're going to come right back. Stay with us. More Talk Back coming right up.
Dennis Bragg with the updated weather. The warmest conditions we've seen so far this year over the next couple of days before we transition back to showers. Mostly sunny today. Highs near 80 degrees in nearly all locations. A few clouds at times overnight, but remaining mild through Tuesday morning. Tuesday looks sunny and even warmer with highs well into the mid-80s. That would be a solid 25 degrees above our normal temperature this time of the year. However, clouds will push in from the next system in the evening with rain developing overnight into Wednesday morning.
Women experience unique life stages such as pregnancy or menopause that can increase their risk of developing cardiovascular disease over the course of their lifetime.
But here's the good news. Women have the best resource. We have each other.
Visit goredforwomen.org today to learn more.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the Monday edition of Talk Back. It's open phones, and we are going to get right back to it with Harry, who's waiting very patiently. Harry, good morning, and thanks for holding. What's on your mind, please?
Yeah, good morning, Peter. Yeah, first off, I want to make a call out to Mark. He seems to enjoy my call so much, so good morning, buddy.
Okay.
I'm sure people keep thinking I just rag on Trump all the time, but he does do some stuff right. I mean, just recently he did that executive order trying to, psychedelic drugs, helping it to further along for mental health, and he also put an executive order to lower the level on marijuana, which I thought was a smart thing to do. I mean, he does some good stuff once in a while.
Now, but what do you mean by lowering the level of intoxication or what?
They have a class one, class two.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I think he dropped it down to two, or at least that's what I think. So the thing is that they put the level on how
dangerous it is, right, yeah.
Yeah, how dangerous, also whether it's useful medically. So, because actually fentanyl is only a level two.
Okay.
Because it is a medical, they use it for medical purposes.
Yes, it certainly is, right.
So it's not a class one, it's a class two. So, I mean, it seems like a worse drug, but in the long run, but it still has medical uses, so it's not a level one. But anyway, also, he does, he does a lot of good, some good stuff once in a while, but the thing is, I don't hear nobody ever say on the conservative side that Biden did anything good. So, I mean, I know he did. There had to be some stuff they appreciated that he did, but I don't ever hear him say anything about that. So I'm wondering who really has a derangement syndrome when they talk about Biden. It's always Biden was the worst ever. Biden did this. Biden did that. But I never hear him say, "Well, he did do some stuff right."
Well, that's good to know. I'm glad you're coming around now. Are you saying this kind of grudgingly, or is
no,
it?
No, I'm very willingly acceptable when he does something. Right. I'm just wondering, can you say anything? Can you think of anything that Biden did right?
To be honest with you, I looked at Joe Biden with in my heart of hearts compassion. I mean, he was a man who I think it was thrust and manipulated into that situation. He was an elderly man who was beginning to lose his lose the conscious ability to be able to be president. I think he was used horribly by people, and I feel really bad for him.
He was always striving to be president. I mean, he's been trying to be president for a long time.
But I know.
See now, you see right there. You said you all gave him. He's just a poor old man.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm just wondering. So you can't think of anything that he put out that they did right then?
To be honest with you, I wasn't paying that close of attention to him. So. Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, there you go. Like I say, I'm willing to say that Trump does some stuff right, but apparently conservatives can't say the same thing with Biden. So.
Well, I'll have to go into my history books and find something just for you. How's that sound?
Okay, great.
Harry, thanks for the call. Yeah. All right. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. It is open phones for the next 15 minutes, and then we have the KGVO Book Club. The book is called George Bush. It's by Timothy Napoli, and so we're going to be talking about that and taking your phone calls with Mirdad and Michael as they are going to be facilitating that conversation. But for right now, we would love to have you give us a call about whatever might be going on in your mind. It is a spectacular day out there. It was a gorgeous weekend. Did you have a chance to do anything exciting, Nick? Get out there and play a little golf or do whatever?
Nope. Like I said, I mowed my mom's lawn and just kind of hung out, got ready for the week. So, yep.
Well, I was Mr. Lawnmower guy. I mowed my lawn. I trimmed my lawn, and my wife was out doing things with her sister, and so I was pretty much alone at the house. So I got some stuff done, and that was kind of fun. But I want to know what's going on with you folks, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Is there anything that happened to you that you'd like to share with us this morning? I mean, it was a spectacular weekend. Maybe you had a good round of golf. Maybe you got out there and planted some flowers, or we got busy in the yard, or whatever you'd like to share with us this morning at 721-1290. So, hi. All right. I will tell you one thing, though. My good friend Mike Ramsey came by, and he has a new dog. I'm going to show you the new dog, Nick. There he is right there. He's enormous. He's a great big guy, and his name is Yeller. I'm going to put him right up to the microphone there. So anyway, I love big, you know, slobbery dogs. I love them. We grew up with them. My grandmother had Norwegian Elkhounds, and so I was always surrounded by dogs. We do not have one in our house right now. We just decided not to do that. So, but anyway, I'd love to know what's going on with you folks. 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And let's get Dave. Dave, go ahead, please. You're back.
Yeah, since we're saying good things about Trump, I could say that, you know, I support tariffs in a certain way.
Right.
I think he messed it up in doing it so craziness. But I would say that the idea is not a bad idea, but his the way he handled it was terrible. But, you know, what I have a problem with is I never hear anyone who's a real favorite of Trump come on the radio and say, you know, I disagree with this from Trump. I don't think he handled this right.
Okay.
You know, the breaking in of the Capitol building. There's never, I don't hear anyone criticize that is, you know, a pro-Trump person. So, I mean, that's my problem is they're almost universally just, whatever Trump does is just so great and wonderful, and we'll never criticize him. That's my problem. But, you know, and on top of that, you know, of course, his lack of truthfulness bothers me. You know, and Netanyahu to boot. And I could say, you know, Netanyahu, you know, I can be pro-Israeli. Yeah. I can support the Israeli people. But Netanyahu has been a, you know, he's been lying for many, many years about he wanted this war. He was telling, for 14 years, he was telling the world that
we are rapidly coming up on a commercial break. But thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Thanks for your comments. And we have Elena also standing by. Please stay with us. We have more of the open phones coming up in just a moment. Hey, we are back on Talkback. Open phones continues, and Elena's been waiting the longest. Elena, good morning. You're on Talkback. Go ahead, please.
Good, beautiful morning.
It is gorgeous, isn't it? Yeah, thanks for calling.
Okay, here's what I got to say. You're talking about President Biden, and that's what happens when we have career politicians, and we've got them here in Montana. As far as the state legislature, we've got term limits, but they play a game. They do their term in the Senate, then they run for the House, then they run for the Senate, then it goes back and forth. We also have congressional term limits. It's still in our Constitution. It's Article 4, Section 8. Now, the thing that makes this different from other states is that they can, nothing stops them once they're termed out to be a write-in. Now, I would like our legislators to actually think about that. So that if you prove to be a good person, a good politician, a good representative or senator, the people will know that. You don't have to advertise. You don't have to go through all the hoops and the hurdles. They will write you in. That's what makes it different from other constitutions. It's still in there, and we just have to force our legislators to abide by our Montana Constitution. And that's what I just wanted
to say. Well, a question for you. When was the last time, and again, I honestly asking because I don't know the answer to this, when was the last time a write-in candidate won an election?
This would be, it hasn't been done. But because the purpose is, if let's say, let's look at Tim Sheehy. Okay?
Okay.
You know he's going to be in there forever. But he's termed out. He's termed out. Now, if everybody thinks he's such a great congressman, he's such a great senator, no, he's a whatever the hell he is, they're going to vote for him because they say he's a great guy and we like him. So I'm writing him in. And then it will happen. But if people don't know who the hell he is or that he's not doing a good job, yeah, he'll probably lose. But then we also have Section 7, Article 4, and it says that the Secretary of State, when somebody is termed out, he or she is supposed to say, sorry, we're not accepting your filing. That's still in there. And every time I have somebody who's running for Secretary of State and I, in calls, you know, and they're on the line, and I'll ask them, what is your main duty? And some of them will say, I said, no, I'm trying to rush this. Will you tell somebody who's termed out that they can't file? They're running as candidates, Secretary of State. They will say yes. Once they get elected, they don't follow up on it.
Hmm.
Same thing.
All right.
But anyway, it'd be something to ask maybe Nate Olson about.
You got it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you for the call. Jeff is standing by. Jeff, good morning. Go ahead. We got about 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I'll try to be brief. First of all, I think that it was good to hear that what's happening to catching the big ones, because I had wondered about that with the new change to the format and going statewide. So I just heard the commercial that it's moving. So that answered that question. It would be good if you had a little stack of stuff maybe in the morning, maybe one or two little items when those of us who are too frequent callers just hang back a little bit and you have a couple of minutes of open air. Because it appears Nick doesn't really do much except mow his mom's lawn and fish and golf. So
I don't even fish, so there you go.
So I'm just kidding. But, you might have, like, just one or two little news items out there, something from the Babylon Bee or Not the Bee or something, just to make some conversation. And I have criticized President Trump. My last one was actually when he posted that picture that he says was just him trying to be a doctor, but it was actually Jesus' imitation. I called in and I talked about that. I said that was not appropriate, and you agreed. But I wish Harry would have given us an example of something that Biden did, because he asked us, is there anything good that Biden has done? But he didn't give an example. And I can't think of one. Actually, honestly, I just think he was the worst president ever. I don't think he gave us anything that was good. I'd like to hear what Harry thought he did well. So, at least we could start a conversation or something like that. So, that was it.
Well, just real quickly here, I just looked it up. Google says Biden oversaw the strongest economic recovery of any G7 nation post-COVID-19 and one of the strongest economic recoveries in U.S. history, breaking a 70-year record for low unemployment. So there you go.
Yeah, What website did that come from?
Wikipedia. So I'm not sure how terribly accurate that is, but there you go.
I have my doubts about Wikipedia. But anyway, those are just my various and sundry, not very pertinent comments for the morning, kind of a meandering Monday.
Well, it is good to hear your voice here. Thanks for the call. And we are going to take a break here in just a moment. And we're going to have the KGVO Book Club. The book is called George Bush. And Dr. Mir Dadke is going to be joining us on the phone. And Dr. Michael Mayer will be joining us here in the studio this morning. So we're going to be having that when we come back from our commercial break, which is standing by. And we would love to have you get in the queue to talk about the new book by Timothy Napoli called George Bush. It's coming up in just a few minutes. Stay with us.
Hey, I've got some... Dennis Bragg with the updated weather. The warmest conditions we've seen so far this year over the next couple of days before we transition back to showers. Mostly sunny today. Highs near 80 degrees in nearly all locations. A few clouds at times overnight, but remaining mild through Tuesday morning. Tuesday looks sunny and even warmer with highs well into the mid-80s. That would be a solid 25 degrees above our normal temperature this time of the year. However, clouds will push in from the next system in the evening with rain developing overnight into Wednesday morning.
Childhood cancer is the leading cause of death by disease for children in our country. We can do something about that. We can come together to support Children's Cancer Research Fund, a national nonprofit dedicated to ending childhood cancer. Because
it's enough already.
Go to childrenscancer.org.
We all have someone we love, like the favorite lyric in our favorite song. You can't imagine life without them. So tell them today, I love you. Get screened. It could help save their life. Visit cancer.org/get screened to learn more.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you along. Talk back, rolling right along on this Monday, April 20th. Peter Christian here, Mr. Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls, producing Talk Back. Here in the studio with us is Dr. Michael Mayer, University of Montana History Professor Emeritus, and joining us on the phone, Dr. Mir Dadke, University of Montana History Professor. Gentlemen, good morning. How are you both?
Morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you, Peter? And Nick.
Good, thank you.
You betcha. All right, so let's dive right in. It's the KGVO Book Club. So who wants to go first?
Why don't you go ahead, Meridon?
So this is a fascinating book, George H.W. Bush, and it's by Timothy Naftali. And, of course, you know, we discussed this quite a bit before Mike actually suggested it, and, you know, before we actually landed with this decision, because we wanted to make sure that it's an attractive book which brings some other issues related to the presidency of Bush Senior. One of the reasons, to be very honest, that I thought it would be a good book is I always thought about George H.W. Bush as a politician that is a sort of a throwback to a different era, as it says in one of the discussions of this book. He was not known for his eloquence. He dismissed ideology as the vision thing. And yet he was, according to the author, Timothy Naftali, a person who was very well prepared for challenges facing the United States as the Cold War ended and as United States entered a new era. He served, as our listeners know, at many different positions, from representing United States at United Nations to heading the Central Intelligence Agency, to playing a very important role in diplomacy in China, between China and United States, and of course, finally, being the vice president for 8 years when Ronald Reagan was in the White House. This is a very, very fascinating character and leader, who played a very important role in the transition from a world which was basically bipolar between Soviet Union and its allies and United States and its allies, and sort of made the transition of this country to a new era where the United States was the sole superpower. Of course, I think, and I know there would be questions about it, he also supervised a campaign against Saddam Hussein of Iraq in 1990 when Iraq under Saddam invaded Kuwait, and he would go down as a U.S. president who basically got rid of Saddam but refused to enter Iraq militarily, and thus Saddam Hussein's rule continued for another several years before his son will come in and get rid of the dictator in Iraq.
Yeah, I think Meretz hit on a couple of things. Just briefly, I want to talk about Naftali himself, who earned his bachelor's degree at Yale and master's at Johns Hopkins, and his PhD at Harvard, all in history. And he's been the director of the Presidential Recordings operation at the Miller Center at the University of Virginia, and a director of the Nixon Library. And just running up to break, Naftali is much more sympathetic to Bush than people were at the time Bush left office. When he left office, I think a lot of people on the left and the right considered him largely to be a failure, or at least not as successful as some had hoped. But as Naftali says, for a period of 2 years from 1989 until early 1991, George H.W. Bush made a series of very good decisions, some of which deserve to be considered great. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but he's saying that that he made some good decisions. Then a little
roughly on the scale, yeah, from good
right,
to great.
Yeah. Right. A little bit later, he says, Bush would nonetheless serve and govern with humility. Bush was emotional and a worrier, but his key decisions as president were wise and considered. And while lacking in rhetorical gifts or charisma, that's what Meretz was referring to, he led an administration that impressed adversaries and reassured allies. And we're coming up against break, but back in 2000, Jonathan Rauch, a liberal journalist writing in the New Republic, argued that Bush was the best president since 1960.
Wow.
Which was kind of, it seemed kind of counterintuitive. Often, looking back on presidencies, they look different from they did at the time the president left. But without getting to the foolishness of ranking presidents or every decision that they made, there is, at the very least, a case to be made here. Bush toppled Noriega from power, responded to the breakup of the Soviet Union with calm and restraint, and we'll get back to the others after break.
We certainly will. Stay with us, and we have folks waiting on the line. It's the KGVO Book Club, which will continue here right after this quick timeout.
Right now, in the United States, millions of kids are living with hunger. This is something we can't ignore, but there is an answer. When kids get healthy meals, they have greater focus, more energy, and higher grades. Nothing is more important than feeding the hopes and dreams of children. To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org right now.
Welcome back to Talk Back to KGVO Book Club. Rolling right along this morning. The book is called George H.W. Bush. And Michael, go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, as I was saying, you could make at least a case for Jonathan Rauch's argument that Bush toppled Noriega from power, responded to the breakup of the Soviet Union with, as one of his favorite words, prudence, as I said, calm and restraint. German reunification in particular could have gone really, really wrong. Nobody was for it. America's allies weren't for it. Britain was against it. France was against it.
Right.
The Soviet Union was against it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think if in 1989, if you were really an optimist, maybe you think Germany could be reunified and neutral. If you told somebody Germany would be reunified and a member of NATO, they test you for drugs.
No kidding.
And yet that's what Bush managed to engineer. He handled the coup that briefly toppled Gorbachev and the Soviet Union from power, again, with a great deal of calm and the liberation. The leaders of the coup tried to make overtures to the West, and normally powers, other powers recognized the de facto government. Bush famously said coups can fail, and got in touch with Yeltsin, got in touch with Gorbachev, and refused to recognize the leaders of the coup.
Wow.
And of course, eventually Gorbachev was restored to power. Mehrdad mentioned the Gulf War, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Civil Rights Act of 1990, which he initially opposed and then in revised form supported, the budget bill that balanced the budget, eventually at the cost of breaking his pledge for no new taxes, which he was criticized for at the time.
Sure.
But in retrospect, looks like an act
the right thing
of,
to do.
Of statesmanship. And the savings and loan scandal, which I think we really do need to talk about, which is a great example of something. I mean, that was a real big crisis. And yet you haven't heard anybody talk about it in 30 years because it was settled and resolved under his leadership. So it's an interesting record. It's probably different looking back on it from a historical perspective than it seemed at the time.
Okay, let's get some calls in. Nancy has been waiting. Nancy, good morning. You're on the KGVO Book Club. Go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Gloria. Good morning, doctors. Glad to have you on the air here. Fascinating subject, George Bush. I want to go back in time. I have to say that I really, the member of the Bush family that I always really liked was Millie, their Springer Spaniel family dog, who had 10 puppies.
Woof.
In the White House. And I remember when George Bush was president.
Be careful where you step. Yeah, I'm sorry.
they won't last long. They're in demand. But I have to go back in time to when President Nixon was still president. There was a committee formed to release at least an estimated 100 of the American prisoners of war that were in North Cambodian prison camps. And there was a committee, and George Bush Sr. was on it. Henry Kissinger was on it, and there were a couple other men. At the time, Nixon had set aside something like $1.4 billion for the release of these prisoners of war. And it was George Bush Sr. who said it was a lost cause and talked against it. And, of course, we left the men behind in these terrible, terrible prison camps. They deny this to this day, but there's evidence, yes, it did happen. And then I want to go talk about, you know, he was a member of the Skull and Bones secret sorority there.
Fraternity,
Harvard, and
Yale.
He was well prepared since his Yale. Birth for
it was Yale, Nancy, but go ahead, please.
Well, yeah, okay, and so anyways, getting to that, he was well prepared for decades to take the seat of the presidency, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, he knew all the inner circle and the power mongers at that time, and there's still some alive even today. But another thing I had a gripe against President Bush Sr. is that he kept his son, George Bush Jr., out of the Vietnam War. He was a member of the Texas Air Force Corps. He got him into that so he didn't have to go to the front lines. And so I was never really enamored of George Bush Sr. They put up a good front, and, I there's just a few things that I just hold against the man. So continue on, and I'll listen to your response. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have 3 minutes, gentlemen, before our next break. Go ahead, please.
I think the point about him being well prepared for the presidency is well taken. I think it's hard to blame George H.W. Bush for decisions made by the Nixon administration, which he was not president. He wasn't the final decision maker on that. And he certainly wasn't the only parent to exercise influence to get his child out of Vietnam. Al Gore's son did serve, and he actually went to Vietnam. But as a journalist, he was well protected and well cared for. And I mean, people with influence did that. It's something. And even people without so much influence, Bill Clinton got into the National Guard to avoid service, and then chose not to go serve in the National Guard. He used influence through Senator Fulbright's office. So I mean, this happened a lot. Dan Quayle served at home in the National Guard. Lots of influential people with influential parents who later became influential were protected from the draft or the lottery system. All of the people I mentioned were turned draft eligible before the lottery system came in.
Mayor Dodd.
Yeah, I think, the comments are actually very interesting. I have my own sort of analogy to the present moment that I think we need a little bit more time to discuss. But he had this very interesting sort of speech before we went into Kuwait and got rid of the Iraqi troops who had occupied the country. And he called on the Iraqi people to rise and get rid of that dictator in Baghdad, in reference to Saddam Hussein. Almost sounds like continue demonstrating, continue your revolt. Help is on its way. Sounds like somebody present in the White House who called on the Iranian people to continue protesting. Anyway, help never arrived in Iraq. The Iraqi people revolted. The Shia in the south were butchered by Saddam. Mm. Wow. The Kurds in the north were attacked. United States did provide some protection for the Kurds in the north. Nothing was done for the Shia in the south. It did cause some major loss of prestige and legitimacy.
We do have a quick break. We have a quick break coming up. We're going to continue with global hotspots here after this quick timeout. So please stay with us. We'll be back. Hey, it's Peter Christ. We are back on Talk Back. It's Global Hotspots. And joining us here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer on the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia. And we do have another caller waiting. This is Rick. Rick, good morning, sir. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. There's three things that I remember the most about George W. Bush. Two of them, maybe not so important. He made the comment he didn't like broccoli, and he was the president. He didn't have to eat broccoli. He didn't want it.
That's why he didn't win re-election.
That
he wouldn't
must
eat
be
broccoli.
Well, no, I think why he didn't win re-election is the no, read my lips, no new taxes. And, of course, we know, you know, that wasn't quite true. But the most despicable thing, and I believe it is despicable, is that he tried to get the Kurds and the Shiites to revolt, which one of the doctors just mentioned. And being an ex-director of the CIA, and it wasn't President Bush director of CIA at one time.
Yes.
Him promoting a revolution with the backing of the U.S. government and then not backing the revolutionaries, he had to know exactly what was going to happen to those people, the thousands that died. There was chemical weapons used on them, so on and so forth. And I think that is probably the most despicable thing that a president could do. And hopefully I'm not seeing that this is going to happen today, but it doesn't appear that the people of Iran right now have a footing to overthrow the Revolutionary Guard. But that's what I remember the most about George W. Bush George Bush Sr. is that he did not help the Kurds and the Shiites when he actively promoted them to do a revolution. And I don't know if you have any comments on that or not.
Thanks for the call. Go ahead, gentlemen, please.
Yes. Well, Meredith talked ahead, about that, and if you want to elaborate on that, I guess I can take the no new taxes.
Yeah, so I think Rick is correct in many ways. First of all, I think, you try to be as balanced as possible. You should give him credit for really uniting the global community to defeat Saddam Hussein in Kuwait. Everybody knew him. Everybody knew him in the Middle East. Everybody knew him in Europe. He had a long sort of an impressive, I think, record of service and involvement in a lot of international issues. So when he picked up the phone, they listened and they talked to him. He created a coalition. Everybody was involved, except a few countries in the Middle East. But even those countries, including, of all countries, Syria, of the Assad family, they even joined in that coalition against Saddam. That takes a lot of diplomatic intelligence and capability. However, I think just like other leaders in this country who promise too much, but they don't deliver as much, you know, to ask the Iraqi people, as Rick mentioned correctly, to rise against this dictator in Iraq, in Baghdad, and giving the impression that we will be there to help them. In the end, when everything was said and done, Saddam Hussein obliterated southern Iraq. And what we know is not thousands of people. Our estimate, even by American standards, is 300 to 350,000 massacred by Saddam. And nobody came to their rescue. With regard to the Kurds, he was much better. We did create a kind of a air defense system, air protection. And though initially Saddam tried to use his genocidal policies to gas them to death, we gave the Kurds sufficient amount of protection that the Iraqis backed down in the end, though the Kurds also lost a lot of people.
Yeah, I think, again, the no new taxes is probably is better to blame him for making the promise than for breaking the promise. He inherited a large budget deficit from his predecessor, Ronald Reagan, that was a drag on the economy, as we've seen how it can be in subsequent years. I mean, the budget deficit and,
sure,
and the national debt in those days is minuscule compared to what it is today. But the decision to bring spending and income closer into alignment is, as I think, responsible in part for the perception of the success of Reagan before him, and certainly it laid the foundation for the economic prosperity of the 90s. It wasn't the only thing that caused it. Increase in productivity was the main thing, but it certainly paved the way for the economic success of the 90s that that Clinton enjoyed.
Well, I will tell you, I was looking at the in 1980, the total federal debt stood at $914 billion, which is chump change, right?
Yeah, it's like 3 minutes. Yeah.
Exactly. So, well, we still have about a minute left in our time together for this hour, but we have another hour of the KGVO Book Club continuing here in just a moment. And so what we would encourage you to do, if you want to get in the queue, Dave is waiting. We're going to get his call when we come back from the commercial break. Not quite enough time right now. But we'd love to have you fill up the phone lines at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 so that when we do come back from the top of the hour news, we'll have you ready to go with the KGVO Book Club, featuring, of course, Dr. Mirdad Kia joining us on the phone, University of Montana professor of history, and Dr. Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio this morning, University of Montana history professor emeritus. And so with those two gentlemen and you folks, it's going to be a great hour as we continue here in just a few minutes. Again, the phone number, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Please stay with us.
This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO. Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It is hour number two of Talk Back for this Monday, April 20th, brought to you this morning by Y-West Storage. Secure flexible self-storage in Missoula. To reserve your unit today, call, these are all 406 numbers, 510-0590 to reserve your unit. Quality seamless gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call 728-4002. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts and service. Call 541-9097. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. For a free estimate, 550-3219. And Gomer's Diesel, diesel repair, parts and service in Missoula. Call 728-7620 today.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Global Hotspots. Pardon me, the KGVO Book Club joining me. We have both of our guests. They have two shows, but this is the KGVO Book Club. And Peter Christian, that is Mr. Nick Christensen over there. And folks have been waiting all the way through the break to talk with you, Jeff. But Mirdad has a point first. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, Rick has brought up several very good issues and made several excellent comments. I remember, and Mike is, of course, the expert here, but I remember that, there was always this, why did he lose the election to new up-and-coming Bill Clinton, governor of Arkansas? A lot of people talked about the economy, but the economy, from what I remember, there was a recession in 1991, but then the economy actually came back, and we have something like 19, 20 consecutive months of growth. The perception remained that the economy was growing slowly, but it didn't, it didn't make sense that it was the economy. I always thought that it was somebody we haven't even mentioned, Ross Perot, the independent from Texas, who basically really changed the configuration of the election year that year. And, of course, when they showed up on TV debating, the future of the country, it didn't help, looking a bit bored and looking at your watch while the debate was still unfolding. And, of course, very lively, charismatic Bill Clinton added to that. And, of course, Bush was repeatedly attacked even during those debates by Ross Perot, which didn't help, basically, especially because Perot came from Texas, from the South, and, of course, that was one of the, main constituency bases of Bush and the Republican Party. But I think we do need to look at the fact that it was a three-way street rather than a two-way street at the same time.
Yeah, Meredith makes a good point. About the economy turned down in 91 and late 91 and into 92. In fact, although Clinton kept talking about the recession, the recession was over by the time he was talking about it. But There are a couple of things. It was jobs usually are the lagging indicator, the last thing to recover during a recession. And in that recovery, jobs were particularly slow, and a lot of them were white collar jobs, people who voted. So it had a disproportionate impact on the election.
We're going to come right back after a quick timeout. Stay with us. Dave is waiting on the line, and Helena as well. Stay with us. We have more of Talk Back on the way here in just a moment. The KGVO Book Club will continue, so please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dennis Bragg with the updated weather, the warmest conditions we've seen so far this year over the next couple of days before we transition back to showers. Mostly sunny today, highs near 80 degrees in nearly all locations. A few clouds at times overnight, but remaining mild through Tuesday morning. Tuesday looks sunny and even warmer with highs well into the mid 80s. That would be a solid 25 degrees above our normal temperature this time of the year. However, clouds will push in from the next system in the evening with rain developing overnight into Wednesday morning.
Listen, retirement is the long game. We can't play about our future or our finances. Let's put ourselves in the right position.
Start building your retirement plan at thisisretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The more you listen to your kids, the closer you'll be
Find resources to help you support your kids and their emotional well-being at soundedouttogether.org. That's soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal.
We are back on Talk Back. And again, it's the KGVO Book Club. The book is called George H.W. Bush by Timothy Naftali. Joining us on the phone is Dr. Mirdad Kia, of course, here in the studio. Dr. Michael Mayer. And we have folks waiting on the line. Let's get to them. We have Dave. Good morning, sir. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I think I was one of those people back then who voted for parole. But I think Donald Trump could learn some lessons from H.W. First of all, Trump did avoid Vietnam, too, that I think was illegal. But, Bush worked with Congress on that tax cut, or tax increase, government was put on a diet. It was not allowed to grow more than, 3%, something like that, in growth. And with the tax increase, it put us on the road to Clinton's balanced budget. So, Bush did things that I didn't like. That's why I voted for parole. But looking back over it, I think Trump could learn a lot about how to get a coalition together to fight a war. And it would be important if he took a look at HW and learned something from it.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. Gentlemen, your thoughts.
No, I wanted to ask Dave a question. I don't know if he's still there.
No, he's gone.
Yeah, I was always fascinated in terms of what parole. I know he was actually a populist, and he was very critical of both parties, and that attracted a lot of people. He was also, a builder, a manager, a creator, an innovator, and he created a very successful company. But I was always curious what, a third option, third party or third candidate brings to the floor, and in what sense so many people voted for him, and what did they see in him? This is not to say in any shape or form, critically, that we shouldn't. I know a lot of people who liked him. And in fact, they got mad at him because he dropped out and then he came back again. And that basically hurt him a lot. I think it was the July of that year when he had momentum. He dropped out and then he came back. But I wanted to ask Dave, what was in particular attractive to vote for Perot? Because that has always fascinated me.
Well, I was always enthralled by the term, that gigantic sucking sound.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That was a little later. That was about NAFTA.
Oh, no, yeah.
That was when he debated Gore over NAFTA.
It was very entertaining.
It was, and that's part of it. He was entertaining, but his big issue was the budget deficit, which he said is strangling the economy, and it appealed to a lot of people, and some in both parties. Perot, the polling showed, drew from both parties, but primarily from Bush. And after, as Meredith said, he left the race and then came back, he focused his attacks almost exclusively on Bush. But the budget deal had, as Dave said, a number of restraints. It had a cap on federal spending, and it introduced the pay-as-you-go. So a new spending bill would have to be paid for either by tax increases or cuts elsewhere, at least theoretically. It didn't work out quite that way, but that was the idea. And the deal did not increase personal income tax rates.
All right. Yeah. Well, we have folks waiting on the line. Nick's on the phone with a caller right now. But we do have Helena and Catherine both standing by. I've been waiting quite a while. Helena, good morning. Thanks for holding. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I guess my question is kind of a follow-up to something that the person mentioned about Bush's ability to bring people together to work with Congress. And given that we see so much ideological allegiance, if you want to call it that, in politics today, How do your guests feel that Bush's sort of dismissal of ideology, his emphasis on being more pragmatic and getting things done, how does that square with what we see today? And how do you think, what were the specific things? You mentioned the reunification of Germany, which I never realized was controversial. I learned a great deal from that comment. If you can talk about it, particularly in light of the reunification of Germany, how his pragmatism worked in his favor and how that relates to today. Sorry for such a long question.
That's okay.
It's an excellent question.
Yeah, we got about 2.5 minutes.
One of the things is, as Maridad pointed out, and I think one of the callers pointed out as well, that he held an awful lot of positions. He was director of the CIA, he was ambassador to China, he was head of the Republican National Committee, and he knew a lot of people. He knew a lot of people around the world, and that enabled him to pick up the phone and call, and you know, sort of without engaging in public debate, you know, talk about these things quietly behind the scenes. But you can imagine how thrilled the French were to have a reunified Germany, and the English weren't too thrilled about it either. And above all, the Soviets, who had, you know, the Germans had invaded Russia twice within a lifetime, within a generation. And so there was a lot of opposition to that. Most of the European countries were not very happy about the reunification of Germany at all. And about the only one who was George H.W. Bush, and also the Germans. I mean, and again, he worked well with Helmut Kohl, who was then the Chancellor of Germany. But he was able to reassure Thatcher. He was able to reassure Mitterrand, who really hated Reagan, and Reagan hated him. And Bush was able to pick up the phone and talk to him and assure him that this wouldn't be it. And as the cliche is, I mean, after all, bringing them into NATO was because NATO was to keep the Americans in, the Russians out, and the Germans down. So bringing them into NATO was also something of a reassurance.
Got a little less than a minute. Maridad, if you'd like to
I agree. And I think Mike, clearly and correctly mentioned the reunification of Germany was opposed by the French, who have been always mortified. You know, since 1870, they have either been either defeated or have come very close to the edge of defeat if it hadn't been for United States. The Russians were mortified by the rise of a strong Germany in the middle of the European continent. And yet, to his credit, he supported it. And I think it actually worked very well for the European economy. And eventually European Union.
We're going to come right back. Stay with us.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg, a Montana family mourning the loss of a woman who died in a fall during a spring break outing in southern Utah. Grand County Search and Rescue says the accident happened while the woman and her family were off-roading in a remote area outside of Moab, and they stopped to take in the view. The mother and father split up with two children on the hike and became separated while they were walking at different paces. Authorities say the victim apparently got too close to the cliff edge, falling 70 to 80 feet, and then bouncing along the slick rock for another 50 feet. Rescuers say the woman survived the fall, and after a difficult technical operation, she was airlifted but passed away later. Rescuers are offering their condolences to the family, who lives in Utah, but the victim's parents are longtime Missoula residents. If you want to snag a pass to ride their revamped shuttles for Going to the Sun Road this year, your first opportunity is coming up quick in early May. Tracy Taylor recaps the details of what's changing.
Glacier National Park is rolling out some big changes ahead of the summer season. Officials say vehicle reservations are being eliminated for 2026, but a new reservation-only shuttle system will be in place for access to Logan Pass. Parking at Logan Pass will also be limited to 3 hours starting July 1st. Shuttle tickets will be available through recreation.gov with advance and next day booking options. Visitors are encouraged to plan ahead before heading to the park. Tracy Taylor, Montana State News Network.
It's been over 4 months since record floods roared down the Kootenai River and other waterways around Libby, and the investigation into whether that high water released more of the town's toxic asbestos contamination is still underway. The Flathead Beacon reports state and federal regulators from the DEQ and EPA are continuing to investigate the extent to which the historic flooding and high winds last last December may have unearthed or moved some of that legacy mine waste within the Libby Asbestos Superfund boundary. An open house is now set for Thursday this week for residents in Lincoln and Flathead counties to discuss potential public health risks and property sampling.
Meet Ingrid, fiery spirit, caring grandma, proud trucker.
I've logged more than 4 million miles in my truck. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. I was driving outside of Ohio when a gentleman stopped suddenly in front of me. But it takes my 80,000-pound truck 200 yards to stop. I'd given myself extra room, but it's not a chance worth taking.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Every act of change begins with a neighbor, with someone saying,
"We take care of each other here."
In food banks and food pantries, neighbors pack fresh food and dignity into every box, moving food from farms to families through Feeding America's nationwide network. So when that box reaches a home, it carries more than food. It carries a promise that together we can end hunger. Feeding America, led by neighbors. Take action to end hunger now at feedingamerica.org.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back. And again, the KGVO Book Club rolling right along this morning with Mirdad and Michael. And folks have been waiting on the phone for quite a while. So let's jump in and get Catherine on the line. Catherine, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Does this book talk at all about the relationship between the Bush family and the Bin Laden family, which they've had long-term personal, financial, and business interests together, and the fact that George W. H.W. was the senior advisor to the Carlyle Group, which is a private equity firm that manages the investments from the Bin Laden family. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that has been kind of responsible for some of the ways that after 9/11, the United States, through George Bush Jr., treated or ran the supposed war against terror?
Well, I think, first of all, Bin Laden, Osama Bin Laden, the terrorist, is not his whole family. His family is a very wealthy family that have economic interests all over the place. I think you have to be careful about. I mean, he was alienated from his family, and I think you have to be careful about tarring Americans who did business with the family with the ideas and the terror of Osama bin Laden. And so I think that's first. It's not surprising that that if you deal with a major financial group, it's possible that the Bin Laden family would use that resource to, that company to manage some money. That doesn't mean that Bush was in league with the Bin Ladens or that he was in some way, in any way sympathetic to Osama Bin Laden. So I think we really do need to be very careful there. And Meredith can probably talk more about that. He knows more about the family than I do.
Yeah, there is a great deal of connection with the family. But remember, that family was a huge family. And Bin Laden Sr. had married so many wives from so many different countries. Osama Bin Laden's mother, I'm sure you know, was a Syrian, and Osama bin Laden was the only son from that marriage, whereas the majority of the other kids actually became involved in their father's business. I think, if I'm not mistaken, 50-some children, if I'm not mistaken, at one point. So bin Laden, Osama bin Laden was actually a kind of a rare commodity in that family. One issue was the oil business that you mentioned correctly. The Carlyle Group, in the book House of Bush, House of Saud, Craig Unger explored accusations of secret political agendas between the Bush family and so on and so forth, and the Saudi, you know, oil businessman. And these are, you know, these are not 100% proven, but there were indications that they had invested in the same ventures. They were very close friends, and this was a relationship that went a long time ago, and it was a, you know, private equity company, and a lot of Saudi businessmen and the Bush family were involved in it, and that's why they had this backdoor connection, which helped basically guarantee that the Bin Laden family could be flown out right after 9/11, when no planes were allowed to fly. They were allowed to fly out of United States thanks to the approval, from the White House. There is also something else which is very interesting in all this, is that Bin Laden, Osama Bin Laden, became involved in the war in Afghanistan against the Red Army and the Soviet Union. And a lot of people mentioned this as, he was basically very politicized earlier on in the 1980s. But remember this, that we also supported the Afghan Mujahideen, several factions who were fighting the Red Army in Afghanistan. And to have Osama bin Laden fight with other Afghan fighters against the Soviet Red Army was actually viewed as a plus rather than as something very strange. So for a long time, his activities were on our radar, but they were not viewed as anti-American. He was basically an anti-Soviet crusader, and that's why he was not viewed as a threat to U.S. security.
Michael, go ahead. We have about a minute.
I think there was something that that Catherine raised first, and I meant to write it down, and I don't seem to have written it down. I can't remember the first point that she made. I was going to address that, but I don't remember.
That's okay. That's okay. Then we are up against a commercial break, and we do have Emmett, who is standing by. We're going to get to Emmett's call when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open, by the way. This is the KGVO Book Club with Mirdad and Michael, and we would love to have you be a part of it at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we're going to come right back after this quick timeout, so please stay with us. Emergencies don't.
Blowing out your birthday candles should be easy, but if you have undiagnosed COPD, you may find yourself short of breath. Early diagnosis and treatment can add years to your life. If you have symptoms like wheezing or chronic cough, talk to your doctor and visit copdfoundation.org today.
We are back. This is Talk Back, and again, it is the KGVO Book Club with Dr. Mirdad Kia, Dr. Michael Mayer, both joining us, and we have folks have been waiting on the phone for quite a while, so let's get Emmett up first. Emmett, good morning. You're on with Mirdad and Michael. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Well, a couple of points. One about Ross Perot. One of the guests had asked about Ross Perot's appeal. I was disturbed by Ross Perot. I didn't vote for him, but I think his appeal was he wanted to run the country like a business. He said he wanted to hire this person for a corporation, this person to manage this, and do the nation's business and get rid of gridlock. I know he wanted to cut the budget deficit and, you know, cut a lot of programs. That was appealing to people, too. But he wanted to be a managerial CEO in charge and say, this is what you're going to do.
That sounds relatively familiar there right now. But go ahead, please.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. But I was disturbed by him. There's something about him personally that disturbed me. He was like a Wall Street tycoon, like a JR type with a big cigar and a big wicked smile on his face saying, I'm Ross Perot. I'm here to help you, and you can trust me. It disturbed me. My other point about George Bush, since we're talking about George Bush, I think we were in many ways better off. Inflation was lower. My rent was lower. But he was the one that came with the phrase New World Order. He brought us the New World Order in the beginnings of it, and that's why we had the first Gulf War. He admitted to test out the idea of a new world order. That really disturbed me, and I think that hurt George W. Bush more than, you know, Ross Perot ever would have. I think a lot of people fled from George W. Bush, worried about a new world order. So those are my two thoughts. What do you guys think?
All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Gentlemen, please go ahead.
Well, there are a couple of things about the new world order. First of all, that is not the reason why the United States went to war against Iraq. Iraq invaded Kuwait and had an army massed on the border with Saudi Arabia. That had something to do with it as well. And the phrase new world order, which goes back a long time, was a reference to a series of events, including this potentially realigning war in the Middle East that happened while George Bush was president. The Soviet Union collapsed. Before that, they lost, you know, the Eastern European countries, and the Warsaw Pact collapsed, and all of those little Stalinist dictatorships were replaced by one thing or another. I mean, they took different paths, but they all saw freedom, and the world was reorganizing itself. And as Meredith said right at the beginning, this is one of the most important things. The Bush years were years where there was an entirely new paradigm of international relations, and they never really worked it out, and neither did their successor administration, the Clinton administration. It was still very new. It was very presidents were feeling their way through and looking for some sort of organizing principle for American policy.
Meerdad.
Yeah, I think it was for a long time since the end of the Second World War, we had become very much used to ideological sort of politics on the global scale, in terms of, you know, Warsaw Pact led by Soviet Union versus NATO, led by United States, communism versus anti-communism, so on and so forth. And right in front of us, it collapsed. Soviet Union collapsed, all the satellites in Eastern Europe disappeared, and they took their own fate into their own hands. They became, for the first time, after many decades, independent states. Germany reunified, which was a huge historic moment. And for all of that, you needed a politician, a leader, who could actually transition from a more, you know, bipolar, ideological-based global politics to something much more pragmatic, somebody who could actually negotiate with this new Russia, which was being born in front of our eyes. Remember, Gorbachev lost power, and Yeltsin was rising in Russia, and Yeltsin was very unpredictable for a variety of reasons, including his personal lifestyle. But whatever the case may be, I think, in fact, in some ways, one has to admit that Bush the senior was very much an ideal sort of leader for the time, for that moment. Pragmatic, knowing the world leaders, having a very good relationship with Gorbachev and later Yeltsin. And so the transition became much smoother because we had a manager in the White House rather than an ideologue.
That's good to know. And we really appreciate your perspectives, gentlemen. And we're coming up against a break. We have Ed, who's been waiting very patiently on the phone. We're going to get to his call here in just a few moments following the break. By the way, our phone lines are open at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we would love to hear from you in the last, 20 minutes or so, 18 minutes or so of the KGVO Book Club, which is George H.W. Bush by Timothy Naftali. So we will be back. Stay with us, please. The number, again, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We'll be right back.
Check out the new spring.
We are back on TalkBack. And again, 721-1290 is our number. We're right in the middle of the KGVO Book Club, final 20 minutes or so. And Ed has been waiting very patiently on the line. Ed, good morning. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning.
Is it possible that H.W. was playing cute with the English language when he said no new taxes? He didn't say no tax increases. He didn't say that. He said no new taxes. Could it be possible he was playing cute and really paid for it if he was? But I've always thought of the English meaning to those words. He didn't say no tax increases, so he paid for it. Another thing is the barcode incident. He was campaigning and got into a grocery store, and at the checkout, the clerk scanned the barcode, and he was really impressed with it. And people took that to mean he had never seen, he'd never been out in the real world to see a barcode. Ann Richards said he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. I wish we had her back again. She's lots of fun. But in any event, barcode was mutilated. They mutilated a barcode, and the reader still read it. And that's what Bush was impressed about. The news people didn't report that it was a mutilated barcode.
So he knew what it was all about. It wasn't a new thing,
yeah.
But yeah, he was just fascinated by the fact that the technology worked.
And in fact, it's interesting because I said the same thing. I shop for groceries regularly in those days, and I said exactly the same thing every time it came up almost. It was astonishing for those of us who remember, you know, the cash registers that you just punched in, you got a dollar amount on the receipt. It's just astonishing that these things could work. And we said that, and people jumped on that to say he was out of touch. And I think Ed's right. That was really unfair. It was a good example of the press really slanting. The election in 92 was one of the first where the press just openly tilted heavily toward Clinton. And that was a good example. In terms of no new taxes, in fact, the budget reconciliation that they came up with, or the budget bill, was not there was not an increase in individual income taxes, and there were some new taxes. So I think he meant I'm not going to tax you anymore, and as president facing the deficit. And his desire for various programs and so on, he broke the promise.
Yeah, I think that he should have learned, though, from the previous election. You remember he defeated Dukakis pretty soundly. And one of the things that his campaign really highlighted was Dukakis driving a tank.
I was just going to bring that up. That's iconic right there, yeah.
Well, that was a self-inflicted wound.
It's self-inflicted, which Dukakis never recovered from.
And they couldn't find a helmet that would fit.
Exactly. Now, 4 years later, you fast forward that, and of course, the polls show that Clinton is gaining momentum. And where do you find Bush Sr., the president of the United States, sitting in a, I don't know what it was. It was, a group of at least seemingly working class folks. Apparently, they claimed there was truck drivers and so on and so forth, having breakfast, and he was sitting in the middle trying to have some, waffles and coffee and so on and so forth. Pancakes, I think it was actually. Two eggs and pancakes and so on and so on. I have never seen a president so uncomfortable and so out of his surroundings. Look, I mean, the reality was he was a kind of a, you know, the image he portrayed was more like a golf club Republican. He wasn't the truck driver, you know, kind of working class. Individual. You know, I think that's the difference in some ways with the present president in the White House. You know, he has been on too many construction sites and projects, and not to feel comfortable with working people, even the jokes and so on and so forth, which alienates a lot of educated people, come from that kind of experience. But with President Bush, he was out of place. when you looked at him. And I think that teaches us a lesson. Presidential elections are about images. And when you go into a surrounding and environment and a group of people with whom you have not interacted too much, you do feel like an alien having been implanted in this.
Let's get Skip on real quick. Skip, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Peter. I hope everybody had a pleasant weekend. I've got so many things running through my mind having listened to your conversation for the last hour. And it has to do with Ross Perot. And I hope someday we can have a whole program on Ross Perot and his life. I don't know if anybody in this listening audience ever spent any time with Ross Perot, but I did. And I'm talking about some conversations when I was certainly much younger than I am now, and a lot of things in history that were important to him, and he certainly stepped up to the plate about. But meanwhile, I wanted to touch on something and just bring it up in case it was important. And by the way, if we ever have a program on Ross Perot, I'd love to talk about that.
We've got about less than a minute, so go ahead quickly.
Okay, this will be quick then, and you can speak about this. Is there anything about George H.W. Bush having to do with the Council on Foreign Relations that you might like to bring into the conversation? I just thought I'd bring that up. Thank you.
That's another one. You bet. All right. So we will definitely look into that. And Jeff is going to be waiting on the phone after the break. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. And remember, if you just joined us, this is the KGVO Book Club. Our special guest here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer. On the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia, both from the University of Montana. So we hope you'll stay with us. We've got more coming right up here on TalkBack. Again, the number 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We'll be right back.
Life is full of moments, from first steps, first loves, moments that make life special. A life can also bring us difficult and disruptive moments like a cancer diagnosis, which is why the groundbreaking work of Stand Up to Cancer is so vital. They know the problem of cancer won't be solved by one doctor, one lab, or one hospital. It takes collaboration. That's why Stand Up to Cancer brings together top minds from different fields to find new and better treatments so patients can thrive. So when it matters, we can all show up for moments of a lifetime. Please join Stand Up to Cancer and Myrtle Beach to help families get back to where they belong, making new memories for years to come. Please go to standuptocancer.org to see how you can join the mission.
We're back. This is Talk Back. Final segment underway right now. And of course, it's the KGVO Book Club. And we have Dr. Mirdad Kia on the phone, Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio with us. And the book is called George H.W. Bush by Timothy Naftali. And let's get Jeff on. Jeff, good morning, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nick.
We had Skip's question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Skip had a question. I apologize. We had to go to break.
Yeah, just briefly, the book makes only one mention of the Council on Foreign Relations. I checked the index during the break, and that's a reference that John Birchers thought it was communist. But there are a lot of conspiracy theories about the Council on Foreign Relations, which was a group that was sponsored by, among others, the Rockefeller family to study and make recommendations about American foreign policy.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get Jeff on the line. Jeff, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning again. I believe the exact quote by Ann Richards was, "Poor George can't hip it. He was born with a silver foot in his mouth."
That's correct.
Yep. My question, though, is does the book talk, and I apologize for not having read it, but does the book talk at all about the CIA and his time in the CIA has influenced his presidency? Because he had, like you said, he held a myriad of jobs. And I just, with the recent deep state revelations and some of the files that President Trump has released that from the 60s that paint the CIA in less than a favorable light, I didn't know if George Bush Sr. came up in any of those topics at all. And it's interesting that you mentioned it earlier about the three-way split. Bill Clinton never won a majority. He only won a plurality twice.
Right.
He never did get over
50%. That's right.
And I think it's a fact pretty much demonstrated by all the data that Perot split the Republican and conservative vote more than he did the Democrats. So thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for the call. Good insights there.
I wanted to, on what Jeff just said, that there was also another issue aside from the three-way, is that his popularity went up significantly by the way he handled the war in Iraq, actually. Very quick, very competent, very, very few people cared about what was happening on the ground in Iraq. But the fact that he got rid of Saddam and he General Schwarzkopf basically forced the Iraqis to capitulate and sign a ceasefire and a peace. Well, it wasn't a peace treaty, but a peace agreement, at least temporarily. That was hailed as one of the greatest accomplishments of any president in recent history. But it didn't last. That popularity did not last. They highlighted, I remember, his accomplishments in foreign policy, but by then the economy was far more important, and it seemed that he would not, or he did not, highlight his economic accomplishments, and that's where I think the weakness came from. That's just from my own observation and from my own memory.
Who was it that said it's the economy, stupid?
Yeah, well, that was James Carville.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
It's interesting. Meredith's point, I think, is well taken. The election of 1992 was the first election since World War II where foreign policy wasn't a central issue. And it's because George Bush handled a series of foreign policy crises very well. And
did they have really good credit for it?
No. because as the fact is that the economy had turned down and that the recovery was slow and that the people talked about a jobless recovery and that many of the jobs that were lost were white collar in real estate and technology. And those are people who vote. And so that hurt Bush. His no new taxes pledge cost him support among the Reagan Republicans, and who never really liked him. They considered him a country club Republican. So it's interesting. And I think that one of the reasons that Clinton emerged is that senior Democrats who one might expect to have run against Bush didn't, because Bush was so popular after the war. Mario Cuomo pulled out, several other really senior Democrats, and so a young upstart was able to get a running start on the campaign.
Yeah, that's very true. The other thing that is very interesting about this is that he had already, got involved in, remember Tiananmen Square, and he went to China and so on and so forth. So he established a very close relationship with China. In some ways, foreign policy did not play any role because it was handled so competently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we're running up to the time where we want to talk about the next book.
Sure, why not? Go for it. You bet.
Okay, let's talk. The next book is by Samantha Rose Hill, H-I-L-L. And the title is what the book is about, Hannah Arendt, A-R-E-N-D-T.
Okay.
She was a political philosopher, one of the greatest intellects of the 20th century.
Wow.
And author of some of the most telling books, and also one of the most foolish books of the 20th century. She's a perfect example. If your mind is moving at the speed of light,
right,
and you miss the target by 1 degree, you can be out in the middle of nowhere real, real fast.
Right.
The book I'm talking about that was foolish was Eichmann in Jerusalem, which, in spite of the fact that she got Eichmann wrong and had said a number of things that outraged people, the idea of the banality of evil, the bureaucrat who is willing to do anything to further a career is certainly one worth considering.
Thank you, Michael. Okay, Nick, as we look forward to tomorrow's fabulous program, sir, what's coming up?
We'll start with open phones the first half hour, and then Montana GOP Chairman Art Wittig will join us 8:30 to 9, and then 9 to 10, it'll be State Auditor and Insurance Commissioner James Brown for the full hour.
Sounds good. Mirdad and Michael, thank you so much, and thanks for all your calls.